From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The tribe has spoken, and Mark Burnett is the reality TV king. Mark Burnett is the creator and producer of Survivor, the mother of all reality shows, and of this season's highest-rated new reality show, The Apprentice. Burnett has a formula that works. His contestants scheme and spat, fall for each other, and have public meltdowns. The rules of his quote-unquote reality are clear, and the justice quick. Viewers love it when the Donald Trump flicks his wrist and says, "You're fired," and when Jeff Probst snuffs the torch and another Survivor's million-dollar dream. Mark Burnett's next project is The Contender with Sylvester Stallone, where candidates train to be the next boxing superstar. NBC will pay a record $2 million per episode. Pitches for Burnett reality show knockoffs flood television studios, and viewers flock to the shows. Tonight on Point, Mark Burnett shares his view of reality. Are you on the reality TV bandwagon? Do you tune in each week to The Apprentice or Survivor? And if you do, what hooked you? And where are we headed with reality TV? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Los Angeles is Mark Burnett, producer of the reality shows Survivor and The Apprentice. He is founder and president of Mark Burnett Productions. His upcoming projects include The Contender, a new boxing-themed show that stars Sylvester Stallone, and Casino, where contestants compete to run a casino. He's author of two books on the show Survivor, as well as Dare to Succeed, How to Survive and Thrive in the Game of Life. Good evening and welcome, Mark Burnett.
Good evening.
Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
Mark Burnett, there's so much we want to know, but if you'd be good enough first, give us your life story in a nutshell. Who are you?
Wow, in a nutshell?
Yeah.
Wouldn't be much of a life. No, you said it. I was in the British Army parachute regiments, kind of like the Rangers, trained by an American Green Beret who later, General Buck Conan, who became the Supreme Allied Commander. So I was trained by an American. I came here in 82, around the time of Iran-Contra. You can join the dots on that one.
Right.
I then worked as a nanny for a while in Beverly Hills. A little bit departure. There's now a sitcom been written and about to be produced called Commando Nanny, about those days of me leaving Special Forces.
That figures.
And marshalling Beverly Hills children. Then I sold T-shirts on Venice Beach and did a marketing company. And then I started to race in these French races called the Raid Gauloise. And had the highest American finishes for a number of years. And I made television simply to get my sponsors satisfied in their investment and realized it was quite easy. It was easy to make money. I got Emmy nominations. And so I thought, why don't I continue making television? I then made Eco Challenge, which is my first love and always well regarded by viewers. 9 out of 10 stars, TV Guide.
And what was Eco Challenge?
A 300-mile non-stop endurance race through the world's finest but most inhospitable terrain. Things like riding camels across a desert, jumping off the camel immediately into a sea kayak, kayaking 100 miles in the Arabian Sea, back on land, crossing a mountain range on foot, canyoneering through deep, dark canyons and caves.
Now, I may have missed that. Where did that air, Mark Burnett?
That was on Discovery Channel for a number of years, and then USA Network. It aired for 9 years. And people are begging me to bring it back. But, and then, you know, it went on and on. It was literally 10 to 12 days nonstop. The contestants would maybe have 2 to 3 hours in 24 hours sleep. And the Navy SEALs took 5 years to even finish the race after 5 attempts. And it was the beginning, really, of reality TV. It was a sports show where I focused on the stories and the characters, not just the winners and losers.
And then came Survivor. What was the conceptual breakthrough, I guess, for you that took you from Eco Challenge to Survivor? What was the change in the way you packaged this event?
I felt that Eco Challenge, though successful, it was hard to tell great stories. I was chasing these competitors across 300 to 500 miles of terrain with helicopters and jeeps. If I had them in one place, the stories would be better. Huge fan of Lord of the Flies, huge fan of John Nash, non-cooperative game theory and Prisoner's Dilemma. Mm-hmm. And so I felt that, you know, a show where you take 16 diverse people, you build a world with your bare hands and then destroy the very world you created by the peer group voting one person out per week. A horrific emotion for anybody, because nobody likes to not think they're liked, would create a great social psychological drama. It's really social Darwinism, the evolution of personality.
We're going to get into that more later in the show. We want to hear exactly how you pre-imagine pitting these people against each other. But I want to get your view, Mark Burnett. Here you are, the sort of king of reality TV. And I think it's pretty easy to make the claim for it, though there are a million or some other very large number of reality TV shows out there now that have been out there. I wonder what you think about where it has all come and where it's going. At this point, in the February sweeps this year, about 21% of primetime hours were filled with reality TV, up from 13% last year. Two American Idol and Survivor All-Stars among the most watched shows in February. The Apprentice right up there. Did you ever imagine that this could so completely pounce on traditional TV and chew off such a big hunk of real estate there?
I don't think anybody knew that, Tom. I think that I did believe that Survivor would so bite into the psyche. It would be kind of like Twin Peaks. Do you remember Twin Peaks?
Very well.
Everybody wondered, you know, who did the murder, who did it.
Yeah.
And we talked about it at the water cooler. And I felt that we'd have a niche audience who would like a pop culture version of Lord of the Flies. What I didn't realize was the first season of Survivor, a little summer season, its finale reached 72 million viewers. It was the most watched audience since Sonny and Cher in 1973. Nobody could predict that. And since then, it's gone on. But I'd like to say that I don't really like or didn't create the word reality, because I don't think reality is this conversation. You're talking to me. Mm-hmm. I don't even think news is reality. Mm. Maybe NPR news is reality. But I don't think that the morning shows, which are news divisions for the early show, today show, mm-hmm. what has cooking got to do with my news? You know, so I don't think even news shows are reality. Certainly me placing 16 people on an island is contrived. What isn't contrived is the situational drama that arises within that peer group and the pressure placed upon them. So, you know, it's a strange word. I'd prefer to call it, for myself at least, it's either situational drama or it's unscripted drama.
Now, of course, the networks love that latter phrase, unscripted drama, because that has saved them a bundle of money. They were able to lay off all those writers for these hours and let people just talk, record what they said, and turn that in, spin gold out of that. But now you're getting $2 million an episode for this next show, The Contender. Can that still pay for the networks when you're getting paid that much?
Tom, you're just out of the loop. Eco Challenge was a cable show. It was never less than 1.7 million an hour for 9 years on cable. So cost basis efficiency. In fact, Eco Challenge was way more expensive than The Contender. In fact, Survivor, the numbers are way north of what you think. You just have read certain things.
I'm way out of the loop, obviously.
The numbers are way north. However, let's analyze. You know, if you want to talk about business for a moment.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd rather talk about career, but if
you, we will.
If you
we
brought
will.
Up, yeah. You brought up business.
Yeah.
Let's look at how much money has CBS brought in on Survivor? $1 billion.
That's a fair sum.
And so if you look at the situation, how many businesses in the world would have about 99% of the gross revenue retained by the factory and 1% by the people creating and delivering the products? I've simply evened up the score a little bit. So in my wildest dreams, with my, as you say, supersized deals, I may be getting about 27, 28% of the gross. Not very much. So all I've done is even things up, and they're very happy to pay me.
They say you're a super salesman, and we can hear it on both sides of this equation, business and creative. Let's turn back to the creative, because it really is interesting to me. You talked about John Nash's non-cooperative game theory. We can clearly see that on display in Survivor and others, about the social Darwinism. But how do you know, when you set out to design or you think of a potential show, how do you know what will work? What are the dynamics that are necessary for a Mark Burnett, quote-unquote, reality TV show or situational drama to work?
It's in my head. I have pictures in my head, and I'll give you an example. You know, the Tribal Council on Survivor, I saw as a courtroom drama. I thought, what are the most mind-controlling dramatic places? Well, Catholic churches clearly are a place where they'd like to control your mind to believe you must speak through a priest to get to God. They're always dimly lit places with candles, because it's a fact that the brain is far less resistant in that environment. One of the most awful things in the history of the world was Hitler. Hitler only held his rallies at night with torchlight. Again, the masses' resistance was lowered. The messianic secret societies always have their ceremonies at night.
Sure, make it dark, make it spooky, candlelight or a sputtering flame of some kind.
Exactly. So I did that. Mm-hmm. I then realized that in the case of surviving on an island, life is only around fire. Without the fire, you can't boil the water, eat the food, you have no warmth, no light. And so I made them have torches they carried, and I told Jeff Probst to tell them fire is life. He thought I was crazy and said, "That's so popcorn." I said, "Jeff, it's my show, it's what I need." He said, "Okay, I'll go with it." And then I said, "Jeff, now snuff their torches." He said, "What?" I said, "You're putting out, you're killing them, and I want you to say you're dead." He said, "I'm not going to say that." I said, "Okay, how about the tribe has spoken?" And that stuck. But if you look at what happens then, their life is taken from them in the embodiment of the quenching of the flame.
They're made invisible almost. They're a ghost.
Then they walk off. Mm. But if you look at what happens, take a look tonight if you see it, or next week. They change from the orange light of tribal council and walk down a long path to disappear into the light blue colour, because I believe blue is the colour of death. I change the music to my funeral type music, and no one speaks. Even after they disappear, there's a moment of silence, which is typical at funerals. I then have Jeff say something positive. I change the music back to orange in colour, and they pick up after a positive word from Jeff that, okay, you've learned a lesson, I'll see you tomorrow. That means they all stand with their flames. They're now alive again, yeah, and leave the set.
I guess
there's a lot more thought into this than you realize.
Yeah. No, I'm getting the picture. I guess I should have thought this, because it's television. I didn't expect you to be quite so visually oriented. I expected more of a kind of anthropological description of setting up that Lord of the Flies framework that's going to put these people at each other's throats. That must be also a big factor in how you think about these things.
I don't need to put them at each other's throats. The very embodiment of human beings in nature. Lord of the Flies said, take a bunch of young children who have no real meanness in them, but suddenly they're on an island. The adults disappear, therefore convention and legal rules disappear. The children become savages. Id, which, you know, as Jung would say, is the way that human beings, self-preservation is their number one, they'll kill for it. But in the end of Lord of the Flies, when the French captain comes back in his press white uniform, the children begin to cry because they're only children, and seeing an adult makes them remember their children. And that is the social psychological drama that exists within that. And I knew it would happen on Survivor, and it does.
Should we begin to cry when these things end and we look at all this kind of dirty, low-down human behavior that we've witnessed? Do you have any misgivings about celebrating social Darwinism as the central dynamic of your shows, Mark Burnett?
But the social Darwinism isn't necessarily negative. You're assuming that they're evolving negatively. Many of them evolve positively, as we saw a couple of weeks ago, when Jenna had a feeling that her mother's cancer was worsening and told us, "I want to go home." I tried to talk her out of it, but realized you can't keep someone there if they don't want to be there. So for the first time, someone didn't really quit. They went home, and her mother died only 8 days later. She was at the bedside because a little voice told her that she should go home. One thing you find about the island, your sensory acuity grows to a maximum when there's no newspapers, no radio, no television, no cars, none of the 5,000 images a day we all see in modern America. You start to hear better, see better, and your intuition grows. We've lost nature in the raw.
and getting it back through the tube. And Mark Burnett's Survivor, now The Apprentice, The Contender is coming. We'll talk about what that's going to be. We're talking tonight with the king, let's say, of reality TV, Mark Burnett. He's the creator of Survivor, the creator of The Apprentice, the man to thank or heckle for the onslaught of reality television. You can join our conversation tonight. Do you tune in each week to The Apprentice, to Survivor? Are you on the reality TV bandwagon? If so, what hooked you? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Asbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight with the king of reality TV, Mark Burnett, creator of Survivor, of The Apprentice. It's coming up soon, The Contender. You can join our conversation tonight. What is driving America's fascination in reality TV with other people's lives, other people's situational circumstances, situational dramas? Have we become a voyeur nation and exhausted when looking for escape? Do reality shows have their hooks into you? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've all seen it. It's on every week right now. Survivor All-Star, culmination of so many survivors. What is it, 7 or 8 now? Let's listen to just a bit here of Jerry Manthe considering what she will, who she'll vote off in the next tribal council.
I was approached by Lex, Colby, and Ethan to vote for Rich. I immediately said, hell yeah, count me in. But the downside is it doesn't make any sense for me to team up with three guys who are then going to kick my ass in every challenge afterwards.
Another high drama moment from Survivor All-Stars. We're joined tonight by Mark Burnett, creator of Survivor, of The Apprentice, of The Contender coming up, and more than that. We're joined right now by someone who's working with Mark Burnett. Mike Darnell is Executive Vice President of Alternative and Late Night Programming at Fox Broadcasting Company. His most recent series include American Idol, Joe Millionaire, The Simple Life, and My Big Fat Obnoxious Fiancé. Good evening and welcome, Mike Darnell.
Hey, guys. Hey, Tom. Hey, Mark.
Hi there. How you doing?
Mark, what are you doing?
I'm sitting NPR, can you believe?
I know, can you believe it?
Allow me and you on their air.
I just saw Mark at the Hilton's house.
Now we've got true reality TV going on. Mark Darnell, you've jumped into this with both feet at Fox Television. You've done a lot already. Where do you see this going? Where's reality TV headed? Where are you headed next with Mark Burnett?
Well, Mark and I are doing a show called The Casino, which is sort of, I like to think of it as like the restaurant on speed. I think it's going to be a big deal. I really do. I think The Casino's a really intense idea because it's a place where, you know, even just if you walk in, you can feel things are happening. If the restaurant was good, this should be five times better.
Give us the structure. What's the casino going to be? What's the setup?
Mark, why don't you tell them that?
Really, think of the show, The Restaurant, which he referred to, Tom, which I don't know if you saw, was a show where I followed a young Italian-American chef, Rocco DeSpirito, starting a new restaurant. He'd only cooked French before, and then he decided to honor his family and cook Italian.
Okay.
It was a story of could he open the restaurant. It was a workplace situational drama. Now we follow two young guys for Fox, Tim Poster and Tom Breitling. They started Travelscape, which they sold to Expedia.com for $500 million.
Yeah.
They took that money and bought the Golden Nugget from MGM, two young 34-year-old upstarts. This series is 16 hours on Fox, following these guys starting this casino. It's a little bit like the Love Boat in some ways, where they own the place, except the casino is the boat. And each week, customers come. Now, why do people go to Vegas? They want as much fun and to get rich quick in about 24 hours.
So where's the social Darwinism factor in this show, Mark?
This is not a social Darwinism show. This is a fun show, which is an unscripted drama. I didn't say this one was. This is a different kind of show. It's also all shot in high-definition television. It's the largest high-definition shoot ever in 16:9 format. Yeah. And it looks beautiful. And Vegas has a magnetic quality, even to you, Tom, I'm sure you've been there. Right?
Yeah.
Everybody likes to roll those dice. Everybody likes to roll those dice and play a little. And, you know, I learned, quite frankly, a lot of this show will be too hot for Fox. It'll be on a DVD. Vegas brings out crazy behavior, even in NPR listeners.
Now, what do you mean by that, too hot for Fox? Fox has got a reputation as being willing to play the edge a little harder.
That's just my reputation.
That's just you, Mike. Okay.
Now, we'll play the edge. We'll play the edge, but we won't go over the edge because there's no benefit in that. But it's just Vegas does bring out wild and fun behavior. There are very heartwarming moments and crazy moments. Life at a casino. It's Ocean's 11.
Mike Darnell, you must be pitched all the time. We read you quoted in the Wall Street Journal this week about this sort of crazy flood of pitches that that the television networks and cable channels are getting. You know, what are we reading here? My Big Fat Booty Pageant.
Iron, that sounds good. I wish I had that.
Right, or Iron Lung, in which smokers in a house compete to see who can quit their habit. The winner would get a lung transplant. You had a pitch made to you. I've Got a Monkey on My Back, about people would be racing with an actual monkey on their back. How thick is the flood? How do you decide what to go for?
You know what? You have to have instinct about it. Here's the thing. It's not so much that ideas are too edgy sometimes. I think it's just that they're either not plausible or they're just not going to work. And that's what you have to sort of make in your own head. You have to decide, if you like this stuff and you have a sense of this stuff, what's really going to be intriguing on television? And so a lot of people think it's like the crazier the idea, the better. That's just not true. It has to be – it's fine to be outrageous as long as it's something that's going to be interesting and can sustain itself. And Mark's been terrific at it. His ratio's phenomenal. And we've been pretty successful.
Well, tell us what's worked. You've recently had Playing It Straight. This is the show.
The Playing It Straight is coming on. It's not on yet.
I'm sorry. Coming on. This is a woman who chooses among 14 sexy guys. And what? The contest is
Some are gay.
And she doesn't know who's gay.
That's correct. In fact, when she first starts, she thinks she's just playing a straight bachelor type show.
Okay. So
and then it's revealed to her that the that some are gay and some are straight.
So who wins and for what in this show?
Here's how they win. And also, by the way, the straight men didn't know that there was any gay guys in the first episode. And they weren't very happy about it. It's pretty simple concept. If she falls in love with and ends up with a gay man, he wins $1 million all to himself. If she falls in love with and ends up with a straight guy, they split $1 million. Pretty simple concept, very fun.
But she doesn't know until she's way into it. And then there's this one. I believe this is yours, The Littlest Groom.
Yes, I did do that.
Mike Darnell, tell us about that.
Well, it's exactly what it sounds like. We took some a male little person. And
what do you mean by little person?
Little person would be – that's the proper term these days. There's other terms, dwarf, midget, but they like little people
right now.
And we gave him other little women to select from in a very short two-episode, everybody was referring to jokingly as a mini-series. and then in the middle, we did a little twist, which was we brought in some average-sized women for him also to choose from, but he ended up with a little person in the end.
Okay.
It was just a sort of a cute lark, and I feel I'm the only executive in town that could pull it off because I'm also kind of small.
But what does this mean? Is reality TV, if we can call it that, or non-scripted drama, is this evolution? Is this devolution? Is this putting, just the sort of really funky old carny stuff on television?
I think it's a combination of things. There's carny stuff. There's great television. Mark does some of the best reality television out there. It's just like other forms of entertainment, drama, comedy. There's comedy you watch and drama you watch because it's wonderful and it's Emmy-worthy, and then there's stuff that's just kind of junk food that you love to watch too, and they're both hits and they're both successful. The same thing in this genre. It's a free-for-all because the audience is now ready for everything. They're ready for game shows. They're ready for crazy ideas. They're ready for really well-done ideas. My Big Fat Obnoxious Fiancé, which just concluded, was an really unusual high concept and hybrid, and it was wonderful, and it was a big smash hit for us, and the best finale, quite frankly, that I've ever had on the network. American Idol is a straightforward talent contest, but that's been sort of revved up and is one of the biggest things on television.
And Mike Darnell, you're the executive. Are we ever going back in the TV drama box, or is it going to be like this now forever? What's the wildest next wild reality thing?
I don't know what the next one's going to be.
But, are we going to stay in this stream? Is this the way it's going to be? Shows coming and going quickly, wild ideas, in and out, no more steady dramas.
The answer is yes and no. There, as long as these ideas remain new and innovative and the audience is getting a new fix every 6 months, yes, you'll keep seeing a stream of these. Because, quite frankly, everybody sort of says, well, they're replacing dramas and comedies, and that's not true. They're replacing mediocre dramas and mediocre comedies that the audience got tired of over the last 20 years from network television.
Yeah.
The good dramas, the CSIs, the Law and Orders, those are still big television. And the good comedies, the Friends, and unfortunately Frasier going off the air, but Sex and the City, Curb Your Enthusiasm, these are great television shows. Survivor, The Apprentice. I like to think of American Idol, Big Fat. These are great television shows, too. They're just in a different genre. And so all the audience is demanding is great TV. That's what they're getting.
Sounds like we're getting a lot more from Fox. Mike Darnell, Executive VP at Fox Broadcasting. Thanks a lot for being with us from LA tonight.
Thank you, guys. Bye, Mark.
Bye, Mike.
Mike Darnell, and off he goes. A lot of callers want to join this conversation. You can join us as well. 1-800-423-8255. Michael is calling from Erie, Pennsylvania. Hi, Michael. You're on the air.
Guys, how are you tonight?
Great, thanks.
You guys were asking about how often do you tune in, and my girlfriend, Christine, and I watch The Apprentice religiously every week.
I watched
the original Survivor and really enjoyed it. And then for time and schedule, kind of got away from a lot of television and the Survivors and whatnot. And I'll tell you what lured both of us back in was the TV show The Restaurant, because my background's in restaurant management. And so every single episode I have on tape. And we would sit down and open up a bottle of wine. And the reason we enjoyed it so much is because my girlfriend would say, I could see you there.
Right.
And I could see you on the show.
I have to tell you, by the way, I've just finished cutting season two of The Restaurant. If you like season one, without overhyping it, it's five times better than season one. It's unbelievable. It will be on air at the end of April, season two of The Restaurant.
So here's a restaurateur who loved The Restaurant, but why The Apprentice, Michael? What is it about this one that's got you?
Well, the same thing. I teach leadership at Mercyhurst College, and I have an MBA from Cornell, and my girlfriend says, I can see you on the show. I can see you trying to outthink these people. When they were doing the Planet Hollywood, she said, I could see you, you know, loading the team on your back and running them through and winning the challenge. And, as soon as we found out The Apprentice came on, my girlfriend looked at me and said, how did we not know about this? You should have signed up for this.
You were really out of the loop. I read that something like 200,000 people tried to get a place on The Apprentice.
That's what I said. And it goes in with the same thing with the restaurant. My students, we went to New York City in November. We got so excited when we were going that we made reservations and we went and we actually met Mama DeSpirito and we have photos and we loved it. And my girlfriend said, hey, I heard The Apprentice 2 is coming on. Get on NBC and get on that.
Michael, we got it. There's a total fan. Thanks for calling from Erie. Let's listen to just a little bit of The Apprentice with that famous line that Donald Trump delivers at the climax of each show. Hear from The Apprentice.
Nick, I don't know why you think you're such a great salesman. Your performance was terrible. Erica, you never had a strong game plan. You were frantic under pressure. And worst of all, you let your emotions dictate who came into the boardroom. Erica.
Don't say it, Mr. Trump.
You're fired.
Don't say it, Mr. Trump. Mark Burnett, where did you come up with this one? You were shooting Survivor at an ice rink in New York City. You saw Donald Trump, and that's the genesis of The Apprentice?
No. I'd had The Apprentice in my head for years. But I approached Trump because I rented the Trump Warm and Rink, the ice rink in Central Park, to produce a Survivor finale live, and got to know Trump and was comfortable enough to say, I'd like to set an appointment and tell you an idea in my head that I think you'd be great for. And he said, sure, come on up. I love your work. Went up, and within 1 hour, we shook hands on a deal that he would host my show, The Apprentice. And you know, yet again, if you heard the music there, how do I see? I based the boardroom scenes on movies like The Verdict. So if you listen to the music, it's that moment of tension that builds up to when the judge delivers you're guilty or you're innocent.
It sure does build up, and it's been a tremendous hit. Very, very huge viewership. And you've got that all-important here. You've got 18 to 49-year-olds, second most popular series on television. 18 to 49-year-olds with incomes of over 100,000, lagging only The West Wing. That is right up there. Mark Burnett, stand by. I want to welcome onto the show Nancy Franklin. She's a TV critic for The New Yorker magazine. She has been a very, very funny and cutting critic of The Apprentice. Nancy Franklin, good evening and welcome.
Hi, thanks.
Thanks for being with us, Nancy. So there you are in New York. You've watched, I understand, tons of so-called reality TV. Now you're watching one on set in your own city. What do you make of The Apprentice?
Yes. Well, before I even get to that, I'd like to point out that, you know, I'm making a big sacrifice right now because this is cutting into when I would normally be watching Survivor. So.
I know.
Oh, we bow.
Nancy, tonight is an episode not to miss. You better go off the air.
Well, luckily,
tonight is off
luckily I've recorded it.
Okay. TiVo, so, TiVo.
TiVo, bravo.
But I think, no, The Apprentice is fascinating because Donald Trump is a sort of larger-than-life figure, and he's so consistently himself that he just doesn't disappoint. I have very, very, very mixed feelings about him personally, not so much personally, but what he's done in New York. And I think he has a very conventional ideas about buildings and about, you know, quality. He talks about everything being the best and the best this and the greatest and the biggest. But, you know, I also find it interesting to learn about how he does business. I mean, some of it's kind of counterintuitive when, say, someone's in the boardroom and they think they're going to not get voted out because they've been supposedly nice about someone.
Right.
He then kicks them out because they didn't stand up for themselves.
Right. Too nice, didn't stand up. Of course, this is the show where the winner ultimately wins a one-year, $250,000 job with the Trump Organization. You know, who knows if they're going to enjoy that or not. But it's obviously catnip for an awful lot of people. How do you explain that, Nancy?
Well, I think that it's a little different from Survivor, although there's some similar aspects, which is that there's a real tension between two things that are absolutely essential, which is cooperation and competition.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is a drama. And also I think that in both of these shows, you know, the casting has been brilliant. Everybody who's watching The Apprentice knows certain people by their some of them are not as vivid, but I mean, everyone talks about Omarosa, for example,
right.
And everybody hates her, and nobody wants her to win. And
yet she's still in there. Trump hasn't fired her. That's got to be a fix.
You know, and at the end of each show, you're like, I can't believe she's still in there.
But you've written, Nancy Franklin, you say, the men are mostly a mixed bag of chest beaters and bad listeners, and the women seem to be trying out for the Laker girls, but you're saying that works.
Well, apparently it does. I mean, I find it a little offensive, actually, and sort of amusing at the same time that when one of the rewards was to go to Yankee Stadium, that, you know, the reward wasn't to go down on the field, it wasn't to meet a player, it wasn't to go in the clubhouse, it was to meet the owner, who sort of has nothing to do with anything, and is also a very much reviled figure in New York City. And, you know, they talk about how pretty the girls are and so forth, and the women seem to be going along with it, and but, you know, I think it's changing a little bit. I mean, I think there's now, as the show's gone on, there's less focus on that kind of thing.
And Mark Burnett, if I may turn to you, we've got a minute before the break. Describe to us how you ended up with this final climactic line, you're fired. It's not where you were headed to start with.
No, I wasn't sure what we were going to say. I didn't have that figured out yet. I said, Donald, let's have a meeting about what we're going to say. And in true Donald style, he said, I'm going to tell them they're fired. What do you think I'm going to tell them? I said, okay, let's do it. And it was, you're fired. And so me and Donald try not to speak at all before the boardrooms. He gets his briefing about what's happened a little bit, and then it's him listening to what they're saying. He's a good listener, and he's very, very, as Nancy would say, he's a very smart guy.
Well, he certainly builds the drama up, and it lands like thunder with that final line. We're talking tonight with Mark Burnett, king of reality TV. Nancy Franklin, television critic for The New Yorker, is with us as well. You can join the conversation. Do reality shows have their hooks into you? And where is all this taking television? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight with the king of reality TV, Mark Burnett, creator of Survivor, creator, producer of The Apprentice, the man to thank or to heckle for the onslaught of reality television. We're joined as well by Nancy Franklin, TV critic for New Yorker magazine. You can join our conversation tonight. Is the Donald your guilty pleasure on The Apprentice? Do reality shows have their hooks into you? Where are reality shows taking television? Do you like where it's going? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Bob is calling from La Crescent, Minnesota. Hi, Bob. You're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi.
I applied to the show, and I'm
which
trying to
show,
do my
Bob?
Best to get on the show.
Which show, Bob?
Well, the one coming up, I suppose, the application had to be in at the end of January.
Are you talking about Survivor or the next Apprentice?
Oh, I'm sorry, Survivor. Yeah, and I'm watching Survivor. You've got this program on tonight at a poor time, but I'm watching it right now.
You're watching Survivor and listening to our show. How do you do that at the same time, Bob?
Excuse me?
How do you do that, listen to the radio and watch Survivor at the same time?
I'm also reading it. I'm doing closed captions, so I'm reading it at the same time. And I'm taping it so I can watch it later. But it's been a lot of fun.
It's a pretty crazy show tonight.
Pardon me?
It's a really crazy show tonight.
Yeah, Sue just walked because of Richard Hatch.
Hey, don't. No, come on. He gave it away.
You're wrecking it for Nancy.
No, everybody in the nation knows that by now, except you guys. You're on the radio.
Okay, Bob, you're on the air with Mark Burnett, who's the creator of The Survivor. You want to be on the next Survivor. Make your pitch. Why should you be on, Bob?
Well, I said I'm the most capable person I know, and I'm just a good, strong person from the Midwest. I don't think they've had somebody from the, you know, upper Mississippi River Valley, the Coulee region, God's country.
Mark Burnett, are you hearing it yet?
I'm totally hearing it. You know, if he sent his tape in, it's going through the process now, and he may be getting his call back.
But have you heard the hook? Have you heard the hook you need for that call back? What do you want to hear?
It's very hard on the radio. You know, it's a matter of seeing the videotape and the person. I like the idea of the Midwest and God's country, and I'd have to see the tape.
Bob, give us something a little more. I don't think you sold yet.
Oh, I'm a tough person, and I'm 45, so I don't have some of the weaknesses that some of the younger people would have. I've, you know, wisdom through mistakes and experience, and I just think I'm a real tough, strong person. I work outside every day as a lineman doing cable work.
Do you have that killer instinct? Are you ready to betray the other folks to stay on?
Well, that's something I question, whether or not I'd play that way or not, because it seems like it's a double-edged sword, and I don't know if you're... How do you win this game? Really, my key is just to get on the show, and winning it, that's another issue if I were to get on the show.
A dream come true.
I'd like to make a comment on this, actually.
Sure, Nancy.
I think that, I mean, what I'm hearing is exactly what I think goes through a lot of people's heads when they watch Survivor in particular, which is I think people have an endless capacity for I'm not saying that this gentleman is deluding himself, but people in general often have a sort of mistaken or incomplete idea of who they are, and they sort of think, I could do that.
But you don't exactly have to be a god to be on Survivor.
Well, the thing is, you never know what qualities are going to make for a good winner. I mean, there's been, you know, Richard Hatch and Ethan, who both won different ones,
yeah.
And Tina. All those people have sort of nothing in common. You know, you just don't know. You know, it's partly luck. It's partly if other people can make a – I mean, you just don't know. It's not a question of strength and wisdom, you know, not necessarily anyway. You know, look at that strong guy who left the show even in the last one.
Off they go. Bob, good luck to you, and thanks very much. You've made a pitch directly to the man. Who knows where this will end. Thanks for calling us, Bob. Mark Burnett, give us some greater sense of how you decide – to put on here. You talked about what will work, you know, the non-cooperative game theory, the social Darwinism. Who works on these shows?
Everyone who gets on the shows are an A-type personality. They tend to lead their peer groups in their own towns or cities or groups or churches and are used to being in charge. We find that out by bringing in the final 50 or 75 for 10 days to Los Angeles, and they go through a 7-hour written social psychology examination. They meet with two separate clinical psychologists, their background checks, their interviews with us. And over 10 days, we establish a number one priority. Could you make it 39 days with almost no food on an inhospitable island? Number two, are you there just mainly for the adventure? Number three, do you have the charisma we'd like? And lastly, anything else? But everything else... We get rid of people, I think, want to be on TV. It wouldn't work otherwise. You have to be an adventure seeker for this show. On The Apprentice, you have to be a genuine entrepreneur and want to be a billionaire someday and be motivated. The authenticity, if not there, would be such like a gaping wound. You must be authentic.
So, Nancy, there's the screen, there's the filter, and you've watched and seen how it works out on air. Mm-hmm. What kind of mini-societies is Mark Burnett creating here?
Well, in Survivor or in The Apprentice or both?
Well, but take your pick, both of them, I guess.
Well,
each.
I think that he does, in a sense, have, you know, he does know something about human nature. He went into both of these shows Certainly by the time The Apprentice came around, he would have learned. I mean, it's been 4 years, I think, since Survivor started. He's learned a lot about how people interact with each other, how to get people into competition. It's hard to say. There have now been so many reality shows. It's hard to say where things are going because it's more as though that there's a flowering of them. I mean, you can't really generalize about all of them.
They're all over the place, yeah.
They are all over the place. I mean, I think there are some things that some of them have in common, which is I think in general people have this fantasy that fame and money, but fame even more than money, mm-hmm. will change their lives. And you know, to some extent it does, obviously. You know, some of the people from the first from the first edition of Survivor, even the ones who didn't win, you know, became household names.
And Nancy, finally, I want to ask you, where do you think this is headed? I mean, you say you love The Apprentice and watch it religiously. Many people do. At the same time, you know, you've got a kind of critical take on it. You talk about this New York that it portrays, a city of jets, helicopters, limos, polished marble, a pretty package with nothing inside.
Right. I've lived here for 25 years, and I have a very different kind of life. I, you know, take the subway. I pick up my own dry cleaning. I don't have any polished marble or gilt-edged mirrors in my house.
But take that New York analysis you've done writ large. Mm-hmm. If people take some portion of their cues about interaction and their culture and their society from television, and now that means reality TV, where's that taking us?
Well, I'm not sure it takes us anywhere we haven't already been, because mm-hmm. I do think that there is something, and I think this is part of the reason that people are fascinated. People watch these things and they think, how would I do in that situation?
Oh, yeah.
You know, and part of them thinks, you know, there but for the grace of God go I, and then part of them thinks, how can I get a piece of that? I mean, people are very torn. And also, because the casting has been so good, people have emotional reactions. I mean, I cried when Rudy was voted off the all-star version of Survivor. You know, these people are very vivid. I think it's really hard to say where things are going. I do think that because they save the networks a lot of money, and they're extremely popular, they do very well in the ratings, most of them, they're not going to go away anytime soon. And people have learned how to do a whole variety of them, and they're, in a way, they are scripted, because the editing serves almost as a script. I mean, certainly the producers can...
A lot of leeway there.
Yes. And, you know, I know that, I remember looking at the contract for Survivor online after the first one, and it says that CBS has the right in perpetuity to show these people's lives, and then it says, and they have to agree to it, and then it quotes, it says, whether or not I am recognizable.
so much for reality.
That's still in the contract.
Right.
But in other words, you know, it's you know, so they almost are scripted, and you know, a lot of them are very good. I love Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. You know, I really do love Survivor. I have a lot of mixed feelings, but what I don't like are the ones that have to do with humiliation and people being tricked. I had a very, very hard time with my big, fat, obnoxious fiancé, which to me was excruciatingly humiliating.
Well, it's working all the angles here. Nancy Franklin, thanks for your insights tonight, and thanks for being with us.
Okay, my pleasure.
Nancy Franklin, television critic for The New Yorker magazine. Mark Burnett, your response. There's a big-time critic looking out on your shows and some of the other shows in the genre. What do you think?
Well, I mean, Nancy obviously likes my shows.
Yep.
I think my shows are like mini movies. You know, I make drama, and the best arbiter of whether I'm doing a good job or not are my ratings. And I guess that as of last week, CSI and The Apprentice, which go head to head, are equal in the 18 to 49, and Friends is slightly ahead of Survivor in the 18 to 49. The Restaurant, as you've heard.
Yeah.
People can't wait for it to come back. It was the highest rated show for years on Sundays at 10. And I'm enjoying what I'm doing. You know, I don't think it matters whether it's reality or not, or unscripted, or comedy, or drama.
Mm-hmm.
It's just good TV. People work pretty hard all day long. They come home. Some nights they go out for dinner. Some nights they go out and dance. And some nights they stay home and watch television. And that's all they really care about. And look at Thursday nights. Let's analyze the most expensive, most important night of American television, at least. Mm. On NBC, you have Friends, great show, 25 million viewers. Will and Grace, great show, 20 million viewers. Followed by The Apprentice, great show, 23 million viewers. And ER, 26 million viewers. Opposite that, at 8 o'clock on CBS, Survivor, 24 million viewers at 8 o'clock, followed by CSI, 28 million viewers at 9 o'clock.
We're keeping a lot of people busy here.
Followed by Without a Trace, about 21 million viewers at 10 o'clock. I mean, these are two opposite channels with a number of shows in different genres coexisting. There's enough people to go around. Everybody can succeed. You never heard of a great show being cancelled.
Let me ask you, have you done dating shows? Do you plan to do the dating shows? The Bachelor, the Joe Millionaire, all that sort of thing?
No, I don't.
Why not?
I'm not interested. Every show that I've done, I have a genuine interest in the subject matter. I'm a filmmaker. I have to feel in my soul that I'm congruent with the subject matter and I have some enjoyment from making it. Otherwise, why the hell would I want to spend half my life in an edit bay?
Yeah, so that's just not where you want to go. Let's get one more call. Victor's calling from Boston. Hi, Victor. You're on the air.
You'll come back.
Hello, Victor. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hey, Victor. Hello? You're on the air, my friend.
Oh, I am. Okay, great. Yeah, I don't want to be offensive. He's obviously a very intelligent. Your guest is, what's his name?
This is Mark Burnett.
Mark Burnett, yes. He's obviously a very intelligent man. But I think he's stretching the use of the word drama when he calls that show drama. I really find those shows to be more like junk food, which someone else had mentioned earlier.
But the drama is clearly what brings people in, isn't it?
Well, maybe. But, you know, McDonald's sold 6 billion burgers, and how many of those were actually digested?
Do people in your house watch these shows, Victor?
Yeah, my wife watches the shows, and I sort of suffer through listening to them when I want to be with her. But my stomach kind of turns when I watch them. I think a lot of times I just watch people suffering on those shows, and I'm kind of disappointed the American public wants to see people suffering. That's why I see it.
Well, and some they do, and some they don't, but we got it. Mark Burnett, there's the notion of junk food. On the other hand, an awful lot of people digging in.
Well, I personally really like McDonald's, first of all. And second of all, I'm glad we live in a democracy. Because if this guy was in charge, he might take me off the air.
And you're right on the air. What about the humiliation piece? Nancy Franklin was saying she doesn't go for that.
I don't have any humiliation in my shows. It's not about that. I mean, those shows can work. I'm a businessman. I understand that advertising dollars drive network television. There's no dual revenue source as in cable. And therefore, if the advertisers don't find for their products, it's advertising friendly. It won't work. That's why I cut out most offensive things from my shows and have received many awards from the Family Television Council for that reason. We have a very large children's audience. You don't need to be offensive. You don't need to humiliate. I'm just creating drama, you know, despite that guy feeling, it's a free country. I'm glad he feels that way. And there's a forum to say you don't like something. That's what makes America America. But it is a drama in my mind. It's non-offensive. I don't think in the long run that humiliation works.
Mark Burnett, we've got 30 seconds left. You've got The Contender coming up with Sylvester Stallone. Give us the 30-second pitch. What is it?
It really is all about reinventing boxing. I love boxing. I used to watch it with my family, and I now don't even know who's the world heavyweight champion. I have no idea what the name of these belts are. And it's a chance to give a fair chance and clean up and make boxing understandable and back to the old entertaining days of Muhammad Ali.
Boxing for the Masses with Mark Burnett, creator of Survivor and The Apprentice, and much more to come. Mark Burnett, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Fifth person voted out of Survivor All-Stars. Rich.
I've been bamboozled!
That's four, that's enough.
Good on you.
Man, oh man. We played it, didn't we?
Yeah, you did.
Rich, the tribe has spoken.